Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th day of July, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Kick off your shoes, nothing to lose, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
And there it is.
I'm a little behind the times today, but I'm working at it, and we'll get things done at some point. So, here's a great one. There's a new malware attack, and it has a terrific name. It's called Great Duke of Hell Malware. Researchers from the Microsoft Defender Advanced Threat Protection Research Team have issued a warning to confirm that a notorious credential-stealing malware threat is targeting Windows users. What makes this one so dangerous is that it uses an invisible man methodology by only running files within the attack chain that are legitimate system tools, so it hides in plain sight. The Astaroth Trojan can employ many techniques, including, get it, Astaroth, Great Duke of Hell? Okay, never mind.
I thought it was the Duke of Earl.
Including keylogging and clipboard monitoring to steal login credentials. However, it is the way that it exploits living off the land binaries, or LOL bins, that creates a certain level of infamy for the malware. LOL bins, or LOL bins.
I can have LOLs.
You can have LOLs. Are programs that are legit. Often signed compiled code that executes malicious compiled code in a manner that is not intended by the original programmers and is almost never caught by an antivirus or anti-malware program because it's legitimate programs.
And that's often why we get so many false positives in our AV software is because they're trying to figure out what might be malicious operations because the bad guys often hide as a legitimate program name.
And they could be very well hidden in there that, you know, would, excuse me, go undetected for quite a while.
Right. And I'd much rather have a false positive than miss something.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. In the case of the threat campaign that the newly published Microsoft report confirms, it was Windows Management Instrument Command Line, or WMIC, that was the LOL bin in question. Andrea Lely, part of the Microsoft Defender ATP. I want to point out that this is Microsoft Defender, Microsoft's antivirus program that caught this. I'm actually very impressed by that.
It's a one and only time that it worked right.
Andrea Lely, part of the Microsoft Defender ATP research team, an author of the report, notes that the victim still has to click on a malicious link in an email. Stop clicking on links in email. To initiate the very complex attack chain, which also involves obfuscated JavaScript code and more legitimate system tools. These attacks are considered challenging to detect as the full process of deployment and execution of the malware is by way of those Windows LOL bins. To an average person, this activity can seem like a legitimate Windows activity because it's being executed by Windows processes. However, using invisible techniques and being actually invisible are two different things, Lely explained. Because some of the techniques used were so unusual and anomalous, Microsoft Defender ATP, the commercial version of Windows Defender antivirus component that is included free of charge with Windows 10, was able to spot the Astaroth attack. Other programs are catching up. If you're not using Windows Defender ATP, however, don't open .lnk and .zip files that come as mail attachments. How difficult is that? Just don't do it. Lovely. You'll like that.
Well, that's a LOL bin.
Yeah, yeah. and of course, if you have some more to say about this, You can join us in the forums. If you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, the first link is the forums. This time we're in the first forum down, the show discussion, and the topic is 1907-12, the Great Duke of Hell malware attack. You can join us there, and of course, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
One of the problems is that so many people's jobs rely on opening attachments in email that it's impossible to be wary enough, basically. You know, we used to say, don't open attachments from people you don't know, but the bad guys will spoof names. And so it is from someone you know, just a malicious attachment. So now most of the mail servers have to scan the attachments before they go through. But there are some lower-end mail servers, I guess, that don't bother. They'll take anyone's mail.
Yeah, right.
And so they can get through. I just heard a story about a university researcher, I'm trying to find it too, where if not for seven words, he would have been tricked by this malware. He got an invitation to judge an economic prize.
Nice.
Well, his first red flag was he's not an economist. He's a software developer. But then the email he got, all the links were valid.
Nice.
Back to the school that was doing the prize, and all you had to do was download and fill out a form, your voting form, basically, from this URL, which was hosted by the school. So everything looked okay.
Yep.
Someone hijacked somebody's school account to put malicious download in it, but then it said you must use Firefox to view this file. And that's the final straw that tripped him up, because Mozilla just patched a zero day in Firefox last week. And if you didn't have the Firefox updated, this malicious patch would send all of your passwords to the person that sent you the file.
Nice.
So it reads all your password stores. In fact, that is becoming an issue. It's happened a few times in Google. You can tell Firefox or Chrome or now even Safari to save your passwords.
Right.
And they link under your account name.
Right.
If someone breaks into your Google account, they are now you. And when they log into your Gmail, all of your passwords sync to them.
Yep.
For everything you have, your banks, your websites, your credit cards, every password you've saved is now going to the bad guys. So don't use the password store in your browser. Use an external password store like KeePass or LastPass or 1Password so that you don't have to worry as much about this specific problem.
Right.
You can worry about the other problems.
Also, never share passwords. Yep. Places now, I logged on to one of the hosting sites that I use, and they immediately came back and said, please change your password immediately. We've had a breach.
Yep.
And I wasn't that worried since I do not reuse passwords ever, so I only had to change one.
Yeah.
But I changed the one immediately, and then I went and looked at all my files and, you know, to see what, because there was nothing.
Yeah.
So they had clearly not hit my account. They had hit their password store somewhere.
And most of the commercial password managers will watch the password breach lists and then tell you if somebody gets breached.
Right.
Which is handy as well.
Right. So be careful. Use an external password manager. Don't reuse passwords. I know we say this all the time, but you know what? You're still doing it. You know you're still doing it. So stop.
And they can send out 100 million emails. And we used to talk about direct postal messaging. You know, junk postal mail, you know, 1% response is considered good.
Right. Yeah.
With internet junk mail, a tenth of a percent, it will make you millions of dollars.
It costs almost nothing. It costs zero if you're using Gmail or one of those.
Or you steal someone else's account.
So all they honestly have to do is get one person to pay them money, and they've profited.
Yeah, they're going by the percentages, and it's in their favor.
Right.
Because, like B.T. Burnham once said, there's a sucker born every minute.
And that person's mother must be so tired by now.
And the, anyway. Well, and this,
yeah, Blake?
The scams are getting so much better. They're worded better. You get now they're actually going to scary messages. Your computer's been hacked. You know, call his phone number to clean you out. And
I love it when they do it
it's
for
correct.
My,
yes,
for my
they
Chromebook.
Clean you out.
They can, you know, they can send me all the messages they want on my Chromebook, and I enjoy them.
Yeah, right. It's just it's a moment of humor.
Yeah, it is.
I got one the other day that that looked utterly legitimate, and it wasn't until I took a look at the headers, because if you know what you're looking for, you can look at the headers and see where something came from, that I saw they had spoofed the address and they had spoofed a whole bunch of things. It was coming from somewhere in Russia.
Because they can pull the real logos.
It looked good. Yeah,
they can pull the real logos from the real sites. They can put all the links on it. I've seen a bunch of the fake Apple letters. We'll have the Apple security goes to the right place. You know, the Apple website goes to the right place. The click here to fix goes to the wrong place.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. So you got to be careful. Anyway, to the phones. Our first caller is Bodan, our pal Bodan from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Bodan. What's up?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. Hey, I got a question. I'm having an issue. I bought myself a new desktop PC. It's a refurbished model that I've got online, but it's a pretty good price. It's running Windows 10 Pro. The issue is this. That model of the desktop has two outputs to hook up to the monitor, the traditional VGA, and now it's got a newer connection called a DisplayPort. At first, I thought it was like an HDMI. It's not. It's called DisplayPort.
Yeah, that's actually older.
So I bought myself an adapter. I bought myself a cable. It's one end is DisplayPort, and the other end is DVI-D. And when I hook it up, the monitor comes on for about 3 seconds. It says digital input, and then it goes black, and there's nothing more. Then I took that off, and I went back to the VGA cable to both ends, VGA on the output of the computer, VGA to the input of the monitor. It's a Dell brand monitor. Monitor may be about 5 years old, roughly five, six. It works fine. It works fine with the VGA to the VGA, but as soon as I disconnect that cable and put in the display port into the back of the computer and the DVI into the monitor, again, it comes up for a couple of seconds and it goes to black. So the question is this. Is it an issue with the computer? Is it an issue with the monitor? Or is there a setting somewhere that I need to change, but I can't change it because the computer, after a few seconds, goes to black. The monitor goes to black.
Right, right, right.
It can depend on what version of DisplayPort it is and what resolutions it supports. And then the monitor, it depends on whether it's DVI-I or DVI-D. You mentioned it was a DVI-D cable you bought. Maybe the monitor needs DVI-I.
Uh-huh. I just saw the DVI connection. I didn't know that there was a DVI-I and DVI-D.
Yeah, and you have to check your monitor specs and hope it tells you which one it needs.
Right. So, on the one hand, a DVI-I connector is not that terribly expensive, but still, you don't want to buy it if you don't need it. But Steve is right. There's DVI-D and DVI-I, and if check the monitor specs. Every monitor has a serial, not just a serial number, but also a model number, and you can check on Dell's website on their support site to see if that model number has the full specs. If you don't have the
So again, even though it has a DVI connector, there's an I version and a D version. I was not aware of that.
And there's
and the
also
cable definitely says DisplayPort DP mail to DVI-D mail adapter cable core.
Yeah, there's also single link DVI and dual link DVI. What resolution are you trying to run the monitor at?
You know,
that's the fifth thing now you have to be
right.
Keep in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're trying to run it at higher than, I think, 2550, then you need dual-link DVI.
Right. But they all have slightly different connectors.
Yeah.
So you, theoretically, if you looked up, what did you search for?
DVI
well, I would
connector.
Have to look up the model of the Dell monitor and then go and see what that is. And
that's
then,
exactly what you want to do.
Go from there.
I found a chart once with 1,000 different connector types.
Yeah.
The wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from.
And they're all...
And they're all slightly different.
So why do they do things to make things difficult?
Well,
can't there be a simple solution?
That's what keeps us in business.
Yeah. And each one is better. So the VGA was the old analog, you know, video graphics array, and then they came out with DVI for digital, and then DisplayPort could run higher quality monitors. And then meanwhile, the televisions started adding HDMI, which is more of a TV standard than a computer standard. So now monitors have added HDMI because that's what a lot of the computers are now getting to plug into televisions. So it's kind of merging between HDMI and DisplayPort. I was setting up a computer for a customer yesterday, and the new computer came with 2 DisplayPorts and 1 HDMI, and that doesn't help us with our VGA monitors.
So how do you figure that out?
Hopefully it's in the specs for that device. It will tell you exactly which one you need.
Yeah. And the reason that folks like Steve and companies, you know, that do stuff like Steve does, have less trouble with this is because they carry multiple cables.
Yeah.
So guys,
I'm looking at the back of that Dell monitor. It says manufactured 67M like mother, and then there's 2 numbers. One is an MOR-1907FPVI (B), and then below that it says 77354310300P0AZL.
That sounds more like a serial number.
Yeah, yeah.
The top one's probably
like
the model number. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I forgot about DVIA.
Right. Don't forget DVIA. But yeah, definitely go put the model number. And honestly, if the one doesn't work, try the other one. But I think that second one, I agree with Steve, I think that second one is a serial number.
No, because actually I think the serial number is, there's a white sticker there that begins with a CN and then it goes even longer.
Yeah, but
That could be, too,
but... You know, often there's the serial number from the company, the serial number from the manufacturer, then the serial number from the seller. I've seen things with 3 or 4 different serial numbers.
Okay.
You know, and the reseller might have a separate serial number. It just gets a little nuts after a while. But, you know, it's just a matter of typing those numbers into Dell's website and see which one it takes.
And the other question is, guys, is this. I was hoping to get a sharper, crisper image using the DisplayPort output of the computer into the DVI connector into the monitor. How much better or sharper of a picture will I have if I got that right cable as opposed to just using the traditional VGA?
Well, it's going to be very different. The VGA is analog.
Yeah.
DVI is digital. So theoretically, you start out with a much better signal.
Yeah. Although there were tests when the DVI standards first started coming out, and monitors that had analog and digital together weren't as good as monitors that were digital only.
Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, something they have to have that analog circuitry in them. Yeah,
yeah, the extra circuitry. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
okay, stuff for me to investigate and look into.
Yeah, there you go.
See, you thought it was just going to be easy.
I know. Now I got more headaches.
It's an adventure, not a headache.
All righty. Thanks. Thanks for the road trip.
Yeah. Good luck. I actually am about to face that issue. I have a Raspberry Pi that I want to set up, but I realized I've got 2 extra monitors sitting around unused. Both of them are VGA only.
Yeah.
Which tells you how old they are. So I had to buy an HDMI to VGA adapter, and I'll play with that later today and see if I can get anything out of it at all.
Have you heard about the Raspberry Pi 4?
Yes. Have you heard about the problems with the Raspberry Pi 4?
They're having issues?
Yeah, well, what's happened is, of course, and this is a shock. It really is a shock. The Raspberry Pi people did not follow the standard for USB-C power connectors.
Because
it doesn't work with some USB-C power connectors.
Right, but the big advantage on the Raspberry Pi 4 is it's got a faster chip in it. So now they've built USB on board, they've built Ethernet on board, they've built Wi-Fi on board.
Well, the 3 had much of that also. But the 4 is much faster and much better.
Yep.
Comes with more RAM, and it's hardly more expensive. It's a great thing.
Yeah.
But they screwed up. I mean,
even
USB-C is an open standard. all they had to do was copy the diagram, mm-hmm. and they didn't, and now there's a problem.
Well, I've even seen some computers that the USB-C doesn't provide it as much power as it's supposed to.
That's this problem, yeah. because yeah. they didn't follow the standard.
So it gives you 5 watts to charge your phone, but it doesn't give you the 30 watts you need to charge the computer.
Exactly.
Well, a lot of guys are using them for, in my world, for hotspots to control a ham radio.
Right.
And they love it because it's so small and compact, and you know they can remotely log into it, which is connected to their radio, and use it just like that remotely. But like you said, I was hearing a lot of chitter that it was out and they're all anxious to get it. But
I wait till the Rev B, because the reality is that you may not have enough power to do what you want. What the problem is it'll power the device. Mm-hmm. But if you add, for example, an external hard drive that's powered through the USB 3
which
port,
most of them are these days,
which most of them are these days, won't work. Because it's just not providing enough power.
Well, these are what they're doing is to the Raspberry Pi, they're actually adding on another card mm-hmm. that has, you know, being additional stuff for the ham radio.
Right, but if that card doesn't hit, it takes power, it may not work.
And this is one other thing that we've said, which is now holding true, which we've said for decades, is, you know, you can always tell the pioneers, they've got
the arrows
in their back, and this is the first revision on it. And, you know, it's proving true what we've said right along, that, you know, it's got its issues.
One of the coolest things I just heard about someone using a Raspberry Pi for is a rocket vendor called Apogee Components. Or was it Apogee or was it Aerotech? Might have been Aerotech. So, you launch your model rocket and the parachute comes out and it floats away and you never see it again.
Yeah.
Well, so there's this thing called a chute release, which is a little computer that you program to release the chute at, say, 300 feet.
Right.
So it can go up as far as you want, then it will fall back down, and then the chute releases so it doesn't fly away too much. They're working on this new one where instead of just a regular parachute, it's a paraglider.
Oh!
Automatic GPS control. It will return back to where you launched it. It will fly the parachute and come back to where you launched it.
Nice. Sort of like...
just for that, I could get into rocketry again. Yeah.
Well, the hovercrafts...
And that's what the guys were saying. Yeah, we're old. We don't want to chase our rockets.
Well, the hovercrafts are doing that, too. If they start getting low on power,
yeah,
a lot of them will sit there and, they've got a homing, and right. they return
the
back to
the radio-controlled ones, the toys. Yeah,
they'll come right on back. Because more folks...
Because otherwise, it's sitting out in the middle of the lake, and now what?
Yeah, it doesn't float too well. But... a lot of us, ham operators, are using it now to run lines up into a tree, because that's always an art.
Oh, you're not talking hovercraft. You're talking drones.
Quadcopters.
Yeah. Quadcopters,
either
drones.
Or. Yeah. Either or. They can sit there, and they'll tie a fishing line now to them, send it up over the tree and back down, whereas... Like a lot of us have sat there and tried using sinkers and all this other stuff. Yeah. We throw it up in the tree.
Yeah,
and
like
then,
you're a ninja.
And then it gets wrapped around the branch and it's like, oh, shit. I got one tree out back that's got more sinkers and parts. If the tree doesn't fall down from the weight of that, I don't know.
Yeah. All right, Deb. Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. I know we have Mark from Greece on the line. Stay on the line, Mark. We'll get back to you right after the break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Mark from Greece, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites and patiently waiting on the line, Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Question for Steve. Having a problem with music playback on my iPod. I'll go to play things, and these are things that have been ripped, you know, by iTunes, and it will tell me that they're not available in my country.
Huh.
You ripped them from a CD?
Yeah.
Because that sounds like the copy protection, which only comes when you buy the song. Oh, do you have iTunes Match turned on by any chance?
No, I do not.
What's the other one?
Yeah.
How about Apple Music?
No.
Okay. Because iTunes Match will match the songs you rip and give you theoretically higher quality versions from the store.
Mm-hmm.
But if it thinks your song is not available in the U.S., well, what country
well,
is your...
Well, certainly doesn't hurt to check.
Yeah, you could check on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what country are you signed into in iTunes?
Yeah, no, it's the United States.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very strange. Looks like other people are having that problem.
And then what I do is if I go through and I try to play them, they'll all gray out. Then if I go and I plug in my sync cable, and then I'll go to play them, and they play fine. After I resync the iPod.
What changes? Which iPod is it?
It's 128, the latest version. 128 gigabyte.
Classic or touch?
Touch.
Okay. Check the date and time, and check the country the iTunes store is logged into on the iPod.
Okay.
Because that could be set to the wrong country. And that would kind of make sense. So if your iPod thinks it's in Italy and the song is only in the U.S., then it's not available in your country.
Yeah, right. I thought those were all set properly, but I will recheck those.
Yeah, those are the most likely causes.
Especially right. Songs that you ripped from CD should have no protection at all on them.
Right.
That's very strange. I'm searching through their forums to see if there's anything. And so that's why I was thinking it might have been matched to a song in the library, in the store, and not your local library.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure all those things are off, but I will double check them.
Weird. Yeah, I don't have an answer offhand, but I'm digging through the forums and... They're blaming you turned on Apple Music is on. Even if you had the free trial, it might be trying to get to the music from the store and not the music from your local list. That's an option too. When you go into the music app, you can say downloaded only.
Yep, and that's so, usually where I play them from.
Yeah, okay.
And it still does it, yeah.
That's just all the wrong answers. And they play okay on the computer?
Yeah, they play fine, like I said. But if I go through and try and play those songs, and then, like, say, it happened with Journey's Greatest Hits. Went to play those songs, wouldn't play. Then I, after they all grayed out, I plugged the sync cable in, resynced them. Now it's been days, and those ones play fine now. Then it happens to other ones, you know. And then as I go through and find them and I resync, they seem to stay fine after that.
It might be quicker to erase the whole iPod and resync everything.
I had just recently done that. And
you've got to stop giving us the correct answers to things.
I just recently, this is what I'm saying, I had recently done that because I kind of made a mistake, and I went through and I used a program called MP3 Gain, because I have a lot of older music that's been ripped, and they're like really low volume. So I tried to level off my music, and it just made things horrid. So I had to go to a backup of my music, so I had to clean everything out. I even did a fresh download of iTunes and put everything back in its place. I took everything off the iPod, redid that, and the same problem occurred after I did that, too. And I did that by accident because I used that program, and it just didn't work out right. So I went off my backups.
Yeah. I would do what Steve suggests. I would check to make sure you're in the right country. I would check everything. Check to make sure you're using the downloaded version, because restoring may have done something as well if you haven't checked recently.
Okay.
But I would check all of those things and make sure that all of them are set the way you think they're set.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to double check. So
right, exactly.
I will double check all those things and make sure that they're set properly, and we'll see what happens from there.
Perfect.
And that's
thank you.
Yep. And that's supposed to be the advantage of ripping your own music, is that the store you bought it from can't shut down.
Right.
We're some running into that now in the DVD arena. Is it Ultraviolet is shutting down? Voodoo is shutting down? So if you bought digital downloads from any of those stores, you're screwed.
Yep.
Download them all now. But now you have a copy-protected download that won't play because it can't talk to the server to prove you bought it.
Right. I don't know how that works on Google. I've bought any number of movies through Google. I do.
I don't think Google puts any copy protection on them.
I don't think they do either, because I know that when we flew to Arizona the last time, I downloaded a couple of movies, several movies, as a matter of fact, to my Chromebook, so I could watch them on the plane, and they just came down, and I played them, and everybody was happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done the same thing to my tablet. So that was easy. So I don't know if they do it or not, but maybe I should make sure I have everything.
Are you logged into your same Google account on each device?
Yes.
That's probably what it is.
Maybe. That may well be true. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
Yes. Yeah. Well, a couple weeks ago, you mentioned or there was a story, and afterwards you asked have you ever been scammed? And I called, and that's the reason why I'm calling. Although this has a happier ending. So a couple years ago, I did fall for a computer tech support scam.
Uh-huh.
But I was it was one of those I realized after the fact it was a scam. I said lesson learned and moved on. Early June, I got a voicemail from I got a voicemail and the scammers called back. So it was your standard stuff. Man with a noticeable Eastern Indian accent with a North American name.
Right.
And so the message was the weird notification that they were auto renewing my my service.
Right.
If I had any questions, please call. So I did. Probably against my better judgment.
Right.
I told Sam was his name. I told him that I wasn't interested in renewing the service, and he asked why, and I told him that's because there are a number of the reputable and knowledgeable computer repair and service shops in where I live. And so there was a cancellation fee.
Oh.
They were going to try to get me coming or going.
Yep.
Either way.
Yeah, a lot of times if you get tricked by it and pay them the first time, they'll call back a little while later and hoping you'll pay them again.
Yep.
So the
thing to do is to call your bank and deny the charge and make sure that they are not allowed to take any money out of your accounts.
Yeah. What a lot of the bad guys have started doing is instead of saying they're going to offer you a cleaning service, you know, like a one-time cleaning service for X dollars, which you can say is fraudulent, they're offering you a one or two or three-year service contract for X dollars. And you can call them anytime you want during that time. And that makes it much harder to claim fraud with your credit card company because you didn't buy a thing you didn't get. You're buying a thing you could get if you wanted to.
It's a service.
Mm-hmm. It's not a thing. And so it makes it harder to dispute, so the bad guys lose less money on disputes.
Right. The other thing to remember is never say yes or any sort of agreement sound.
Acknowledgement.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm, or okay or whatever. Never use those words because they will record them and then make a tape that says, do you agree to this service, to and paying for this service? Yes.
Or even if you say, mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's agreement.
None of those things. So, if somebody says, is this Nick Francesco? I answer, I am he. Or more likely, I answer, who did you call?
I usually say, yeah, how can I help you?
Right.
You know, always throw the attack back on them. What is this in regards to? You know, I mean, yeah. you always got to throw it back at them.
I can always tell because they pronounce my name wrong.
Yeah.
You don't really know me.
Right. I get a lot of Francesco.
Yeah.
Or they'll sit there and say, well, we're calling about your account. All right. Could you please verify the account number? Yeah. Well, you know, and they try. Well, if you're calling me, then you should have the account number, which you're questioning. So please verify it.
Yeah, because they throw that on you. We're calling to verify account. Please give us the number. No.
You tell me.
I'm not going to give you the number.
Yeah, you tell me, and I'll let you know if that's the correct one.
I'll tell you what. You give me the first half, I'll give you the second half.
Yeah.
But anyway, Dan, I'm so sorry you got scammed.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you were smart enough to not fall for it a second time. Now, call your bank and make sure that they are not allowed to auto-take money out of your account anymore, get them off of the approved list for your account, and move on.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
Bye.
Dan did the right thing the second time, and that's important. It's very hard to, particularly if you've not been listening to this show, or as what happened to Dan, it was a year ago, to realize immediately that you're being scammed. We've said this a million times, but the reality is nobody reputable is ever going to call you anymore. It's just not going to happen.
No, especially Microsoft or anybody else. You know, and they'll sit there, or if they say they're from your bank, well, tell you what, hang up. You can look up the number for your local bank and call them.
Or the number written on the back of your credit card, so you know that one's right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if you have to, like I've said for a long time, if you've got to stop and think about it, don't do it. Clicking on links or answering stuff and all that, yeah, no. If you've got to stop and question it, hang up or delete that email. If it's that important, they'll get in hold of you, especially the IRS or the government or anybody else. Sorry, they don't make calls like that without your knowledge.
Right. The problem is we're in our own homes, and so the cynicism muscle has relaxed.
Yeah.
But what you have to do is remind yourself and think, if I were approached by this person on the street, what would my response be?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking something legal. It doesn't involve
violence. Even going back to, say, Social Security. This is one I can relate to. And when I...
Well, you're old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I finally just got my, you know, started taking mine. But they first send you a letter saying, all right, we're going to... set up a call and all that. What times would be good for you? And I had to fill out this form, say, oh, yeah, this one would work. And I had to mail it back to them.
And they had a phone number in that letter that said this is where we're going to call from.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was sending it right back to an agency right down there for the Social Security. And they said, okay, we're going to call. They then did call me a couple of weeks ahead. Just to verify, and they said, just to verify us, here's my number and this, and please call us back. So I had to call them back at the 800 number, and you hear that it's a social. All right, yes, we're setting it up, and somebody will be calling you on this day. And they did it, and it was great.
Yep.
But, you know, again, they don't just call out of the blue. They set things up because they're too busy. They just can't do random calls to say your account's been hacked or this or that.
And so, honestly, if I got a random call like that, well, I got a call from my bank one day. And it was, you know, this is M&T Bank. And immediately I'm going, yeah, sure it is. And they said, did you just buy, I think it was half a dozen fur coats in Florida? No. All right, we will kill the charge and we're going to void your credit card. Please come in and get another one. And that's all they said. They didn't ask me for any numbers. They didn't ask me for any information. And I thought, okay, if this is a scam, they didn't get any information from me at all.
There was no questioning of what your account number was or anything else.
And they told me, go to your branch and get a new card.
They know all that stuff before they call you.
That's exactly right.
On their screen next to your phone number.
That's exactly right. And I got that one day, too. I got this thing, said, blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, you've got the number right there in front of you, don't you? Dead silence. And they said, well, we're having problems with the computer. I said, okay, call me back when it's fixed. Click.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been legit.
I fix computers, too. How about you pay me some money and we'll fix your computer?
I did that many, 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 many years ago when I was moving to New York City to be an actor. I'd already been doing computer stuff for a while. I went into the bank and they said, we can't give you your money today because the computers are down. I looked the guy in the eye and he said, I fix computers for a living. You let me at that machine, I'll have my money in 10 minutes. He said, I'll be right back. They came back with a check and I had my money. But yeah, it's you got to be aware. You got to pay attention and you got to be cynical. I hate to say that.
And especially, do not, I don't care under any circumstances, ever accept the fact that they say you got to go out and buy, whether it's iTunes cards or any type of gift card. The minute they mention that, hang up.
What legitimate company takes gift cards as payment to something?
Yeah. Never will, never have. Never going to happen.
Right.
It's just a fact of life. So if they sit there, the minute they do that, I don't care. Even if they say they're the federal government and they're sending the police, hang up on them.
Yep.
Send them right over.
Please.
Be glad to talk
to them.
Come on down.
Tell you what, I'll even give you my address.
I got one of those calls. Your child, I think I talked about this, your child is in jail.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I said, really?
Darn kid of yours.
She probably deserves to be there. But I didn't. But they said child. So
wait,
they
your
didn't
wife
know.
Doesn't listen to this program.
No, she doesn't. They said child, so they didn't know the sex of my child. I picked up on that right away.
Uh-huh.
And I said, my child is in jail. So they're waiting for me to say him or her or a name.
Yeah.
I said, my child is in jail. They said, yes, your child is in jail. You need to bail your child out. Well, how do I do that? Well, you can go to the store and take out iTunes gift cards. I said, let me get this straight. I said, where are you? She said, well, we're in New York City. I said, okay. I said, so you're telling me that the police department in New York City takes iTunes gift cards as bail money?
What precinct?
Yes, sir. That was my next question. And we went on and on and on. And I said, well, you know what? What was my child arrested for? Because I still haven't.
Yeah, I'm disclosed.
What was my child arrested for? Moment of silence. There was something there. Drugs. I said, my child's been doing drugs? Hold on a minute. She's sitting right here next to me on the couch. I'm going to beat her to death right here. And I hung up the phone. And she went, you're sitting right there. She looks at me and says, what did I do now? I said, you were selling drugs in New York City. She said, darn it, I got
selling, caught. Selling or using. It could have been.
Could have been either. But, right. She said, darn it, you caught me.
Yeah. So hand them over, darn it.
Don't Bogart those drugs. But yeah, so be aware, be careful. We've talked to several people who've been caught by essentially that same scam.
Yeah, a number of them have also paid, you know, they get the warning on the screen, which we've again told folks, you know, that their computer is being hacked. You know, and you got to call this number, and people, we've heard a number of folks that have been charged up to $350.
Right.
They're part of a scam. Mm-hmm. And all they do is take the money and then they run. And if you had simply just turned off the machine and turned it back on, it would have been gone.
Right. The other thing is they're asking for Bitcoin. Well, Bitcoin can't be traced.
Right.
But how does the average person buy Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Well, of course, that'll happen now with Libra. But
well, I've seen some of them give instructions on how to buy Bitcoin in the ransom notice.
Yeah.
But there have been a couple of cities recently that voted to pay, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in ransom fees instead of the tens. Actually, I'm conflating two stories. Was it Atlanta and Baltimore both spent, you know, $8 to $10 million recovering from a ransom notice, and the ransom was only $50,000.
Yeah.
But there's three towns in Florida now that have been all hit, and the ransom is in the $500,000 range, which is a lot of money. But you're still probably going to spend more than that in IT costs to try to get your data back.
All right. No. I spent a lot of years as a systems administrator. Every one of those systems administrators needs to be immediately fired. There should be fairly constant backups, and they should be off-site, unreachable.
And
if they're not, then that person should be fired.
And that's the problem. People will have a backup. If you're lucky, there's a backup, but it's plugged into the computer. So when that computer gets hit with ransomware, it encrypts the data on your main computer and your backup drive.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be. And I get that individuals don't do this, but I do, and certainly companies should do this.
Yeah.
It should be an unconnected backup. You connect to make the backup, and then you disconnect immediately. All right, that music tells us we're done for a first hour. We'll be back again shortly. We're taking a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get right to you. If you're not on the line, why not? Give us a call. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow, that must mean we are Soundbites. Right here on the Truly Great. And we remain truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We, and I know this will shock you, are Soundbites. And we have Jack, who's been patiently waiting on the line from Ontario, New York. Hiya, Jack. What's up?
Hi, fellas. I have HP Pavilion 6000. I turned it on yesterday, and all of a sudden I get this blue screen, and with this for different languages, and it doesn't go any farther than that. And I don't know. Do you think I got a serious problem?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, you do. How old is this machine?
How old is it?
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, let's see, probably about 8 years old.
Yeah.
What version of Windows?
Windows 10.
Yeah, the HP Pavilion 6000 is a pretty old machine.
Yeah. I tried a lot of things. I shut it down. everything else, but it's just frozen. It comes out with a blue screen, and it comes out with languages. You know, you click on it with the languages,
mm-hmm.
and then it's like a round, like they want to try and solve it or research or whatever. They got it, and nothing happens. I pressed F8. I did, you know, whatever.
Getting a root kit.
Well, it's any one of several things. It's an old machine, so it could be a hard drive issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's likely to be that because that's what it sounds like. It could also be as Dave said, it could be some sort of malware, but it's more likely to just be an 8-year-old hard drive.
Yeah,
you know, the fact is, Google did a study. They have hundreds of millions of hard drives, and the average lifetime of a hard drive is 5 years.
Oh boy!
Well, and that's an average, right? Which means that some of them die out of the box, and some of them last 10 years,
yeah, or longer.
So you're still in the zone, but 8 years is a decently long amount of time. You take it to a reputable dealer, have them take a look at it.
Diagnostic on it,
right? They'll do a diagnostic on it. It is quite likely. My suspicion, at least, is that it's the hard drive. They can replace the hard drive. As to how they get your data back, I'm hoping you have backups.
Be honest with you, though, just to step in there for a second. Replacing that hard drive, I wouldn't spend the money on it, because what it's going to cost them in labor and everything else to replace the hard drive and set it all up, he could go out and get another machine, right? Even a laptop, you know, a Chromebook. Or what do you usually do on this machine?
Well, you know, emails, Facebook, you know,
basic,
the normal
stuff. Yeah. So even after replacing the hard drive, you get a brand new hard drive, but it's an 8-year-old motherboard, an 8-year-old video card.
You can go out and get laptops, you know, decent Windows 10 laptops right now for $300-400.
Yeah. Well, you know what? These people like these desktops. I don't know why, but I don't know. It's just like.
Desktops are generally cheaper than laptops, yep, because they don't have to be small and portable. But people like laptops because they're small and portable.
And you can still go to the Dell website or any of the others, you know, HP and that, and they still do sell desktops. Matter of fact, you could even get some deals on some refurbs. You know, it might not be the, you know, gaming machine, but, you know, they've got some other low-end machines that are great. And, I mean, you know, still will run to Windows 10.
Cost? I mean, any idea? I mean, is this like, is it worth it? I mean,
it could cost you a couple $100 to replace the hard drive. It could cost you a couple $1,000 to replace your data.
Yeah, because just to put the drive, you know, switch the drive out, you're talking labor that they've got to do that, and then set everything back up to install the operating system back on that machine. So that's all going to take time, and you can, you know, talking the price of a drive and a couple hours labor.
Yeah, unless you know how to do that yourself, then you just pay for the drive and do it yourself.
No, that's why I'm calling you guys. Yep. You're the best.
Yeah, then I would seriously go in, let them do a diagnostic fee. Diagnostic fees are usually very minimal, and they can tell you whether the machine is worth saving or not. And who knows, if you go even to local places around here, they might even be able to build you a new box for a decent price.
Because it's always nice to have someone to look at when you're having issues with your computer.
We always say look local first.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that.
There's a number of great places here in Rochester. You know, check them out. And just don't go with the first one. Go shopping around and get a price. Kind of figure out what you want to do with it. If you're not a gamer and all that, you don't need, you know, super hard, fast video card. A good, maybe even just standard video card off the motherboard would be fine. You know, at least 8 gig of memory minimum, and then go with a terabyte hard drive. You know, you'll be all set. The monitor and all that's still good. So all you're looking for is a box.
Oh no, my monitor is Acer. And I really like that. I
mean, then all you got to go for is the expense of the box. You don't need a monitor.
or a keyboard or a mouse.
Well, he's going to probably need a keyboard and mouse because depending on that old system.
Well, they're 8 years. Yeah,
they might still have the old PS2 connector.
That's $20, $30. So, so here's the thing from my point of view. The second most important thing is price. The most important thing is, do I like the people I'm buying from?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Dave says go around, try several stores, find somebody you're comfortable with, somebody you like.
And see about their warranty. A lot of them, you know, will usually, like we used to always do, 3 years on parts.
Yep.
And there's plenty of other places around that will do the same that are here. And again, you got to face, you know, you don't have to ship it off. You know, if something goes wrong with it, you're not shipping it off long distance.
And you got a face to look at.
You can run it down to your place that you bought it from and say, hey, broke, fix.
Okay. So that's your opinion, right?
Yes, sir. Yep.
It's like me calling the hospital and asking for a doctor, tell them I think I'm having a heart attack.
Yep.
Right.
Well, what do you think you can do?
Yep.
Bring it in.
Yeah.
Right. Bring it in. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right.
We got to check you out. But
like I say, we've got no axe to grind, and that's why, you know, we can talk, you know, very biasedly, you know.
Unbiased.
Well, bias in that, no.
We are biased.
No, we are biased in the fact that we say buy locally.
Yeah.
I am very biased in that exact point because I was a small business person, and I like to support.
You're not in the business anymore, Dave?
No, I retired, and I still do. Well, I do it part time, but I don't build. I don't build machines, and I don't build the machines anymore.
We got out of custom builds too because the amount of research time you put into finding all the pieces together, you can't make any money anymore,
right?
Because the pre-built ones are so cheap, and then in a month when you want to build more computers, all the things you bought last month are now gone and replaced with something else.
Right.
Well, so, there's a place that I think they used to call them Lightspeed or whatever. Maybe I shouldn't, but I mean they would. As for like an upfront, like $65, and if you don't do anything else with it, you're out.
A lot of them. I did the same thing. Diagnostic fees are always paid up front
because your time and effort you're putting into the computer.
Well, you probably had this happen to you too, Steve. People will drop. The reason they do the upfront charge. And this is one thing we used to always say. You know, it was a $50 diagnostic fee back then. And I'd say, if you went with the repair, then we'd put that $50 towards the repair. Otherwise, if we didn't charge you up front, people would come in, drop their computer off, and it's deader than a doornail. And, you know, we did all this time on it. And they'd say, well, you owe us $50. Well, I'm not paying for it. It's dead. What do I want? Throw it out.
And they never come back. We have a container full of computers that
I had a number of them, too. That's why we changed their policy.
We can't throw them away because they're not ours. This is weird New York state law. They don't belong
hang
to
on
us.
To, yep.
We have to hang out. So we're charging a storage fee. So if they ever do come back.
Well, you need a sign that says anything left over 30 days.
We do
days.
Now. Yep. We did it then.
But that's why they have to charge an upfront fee because a store owner, we used to get stuck with a lot of product.
It's not worth fixing, so I just won't come back and pick it up.
Yeah, I had a number of them like that.
Yep.
Okay, well, I appreciate your input. And,
hey, like I say,
all right, good luck, Jack.
We're both biased and unbiased.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Jack. Bye-bye.
We're a two-sided coin.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem for the average home user. You know, like we would, you know, we have our diagnostics discs on us. You know, we try it, reinstall Windows, see if that works. But, you know, for the average home user, you're relying on that store that has that expertise.
Yeah.
I joke with some of our customers. I was just at a manufacturing plant the other day. I have no idea how to build your machine.
Right.
And you have no idea how to fix the computer.
Right. Yeah.
Together, you build your machine, I'll fix the computer.
That's how it works.
Well, that's like I used to always say to folks, too, you know, and as far as pavement and all that, I have this agreement with the bank.
Yeah.
They don't fix computers, and I don't float loans.
That's exactly right. Well, I had that discussion with my mechanic the other day. I had a muffler issue, and I could have crawled under the car and seen that one of the bolts had rusted off and put a bolt in and a bracket and it would have been fine. Mm-hmm. Or I could pay him to do it. And I paid him to do it because we were joking about this. I said, I'm not paying in this instance because, you know, if it's something serious, I don't know how to do it. But in this instance, I'm not paying you for your expertise. I'm paying you for the tools and the grease monkey.
And the convenience of throwing it up on a lift,
yeah, exactly,
to get work at it, then trying to get underneath the car.
Exactly. I can do it. I choose not to do
it. Oh, yeah. No.
And, but in this case, I also don't have the tools. Had it been something more than a bolt and a bracket,
right,
I would not have had the tools.
Right.
And so that's why you pay a professional for, A, his or her expertise, and secondly, the right tools.
And nowadays, they've moved into computers, too, because you can't fix a car without plugging in the diagnostic code.
Boy, that's the truth.
Which is, so a lot of people, you know, my son likes to work on cars, and so he bought one of those little diagnostic code things, and he bought an old 2000 Jeep because you can still work on it yourself.
Yep.
But it's so big, he's got to climb up on top of it to get down into the engine compartment.
Yeah.
And we've replaced the neutral safety switch twice, and the code still says there's a problem with the neutral safety switch. So the first one you bought was cheap. The second one you bought was good. And so there's something else wrong.
Throwing
the wrong code.
Yeah, I get every once in a while I get a low tire warning. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it's very clear that it's the sensor that's bad.
My wife has the same thing in her front passenger tire. Every so often.
That's where mine is.
It's bad sensor.
Yep.
She goes, well, we got to get it. And no. We'll worry about it sometime when we're taking it in for routine.
And make sure it's full of air. And if it is, I stop worrying about it.
Well, the thing
and then a couple miles later, it goes off again.
Yeah, so and then you can check it and see. Yeah, it's right up there with the rest of them.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah,
anymore.
It's stupid. All right,
actually, the tire monitoring things are often Bluetooth modules in the tire that talk to the computer. They are eminently hackable.
Oh, yes,
there's almost
are.
No security involved in it. So you can be driving down the street. Someone can get into your car through the tire and mess with your car electronic system.
Yeah.
I drive a
Nissan Cube. Nobody cares about it, so I'm safe.
I got to interrupt for a minute. Andy, for some reason you got disconnected. Please call back again. We'll get you on there. All of a sudden dropped them.
It's life.
Great phone system here.
In the meantime, I will read.
Oh, here he goes.
I will read this news item anyway, or we'll wait. We'll just wait and talk to Andy from Greece, New York. Dave is quietly
pushing buttons,
moving him over to the system, and we're on. Are you there, Andy?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what's up?
The gentleman who just called, Dave?
Yeah.
It sounds like he really likes his desktop monitor.
It's Jack, but okay, yeah.
And from the sounds of what he does, a Chrome box with a new keyboard and mouse would probably be a very inexpensive and very functional alternative for him if that old HP box is not recoverable.
That's exactly right. But what we didn't ask is what Dave did ask what he uses it for, but we didn't find out if he specifically needs any Windows-based programs.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why he's got to go to a store. They can sit down and take the time. And that's where
I'm not arguing with that. It just... what he said was email and Facebook and things like that.
Yeah, but again, he didn't go through the whole list, Andy.
Right.
Yeah.
But you're right, Andy. If what you do is, if particularly if it's Gmail, any of the web-based email programs and just maybe some light word processing stuff and various websites like Facebook and Twitter and yada, 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 then a Chrome... something, whether it's a Chromebook or a Chrome box or even a Chrome stick, is probably more than adequate for most people's needs. You're absolutely right.
I mean, I was just thinking it's a very cost-effective answer, and he doesn't have to deal with the quote-unquote laptop configuration if he's not comfortable with it.
Right, exactly right.
And a Chrome box is basically very inexpensive, and if you already have a good monitor, as you said, the keyboard and mouse, you can get anywhere from $29.99 to $69.99 and get really nice keyboard and mouse combo.
Right.
Plug right in and he's off to the races.
You got it.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks, Andy. You too. And Andy is quite right. If you've not looked at Chromebooks and Chrome boxes, you really should. If we've said this a million times. If you're using the Chrome browser on your desktop, spend a week or two playing with it and see what you use other than that. In general, most people get online and what they use is the browser and almost nothing else. Maybe they play a couple of games that happen in Facebook, or you know they're playing solitaire, which you can get for a Chromebook and things like that. If what you do is doable on a Chromebook, and to be honest, there's nothing I do that I can't do on a Chromebook, including edit video and audio. You can do everything on a Chromebook these days, a Chromebook or box, Chrome OS device. And why would I spend hundreds of dollars more and open myself up to viruses and problems when all I have to do is buy a Chrome device and I'm done? We are finding that most people don't, sadly, I mean, I admit it's sad, don't actually need a Windows machine or a Mac or a Linux box. They can do everything they want to do on a Chromebook. And of course, the new Chrome devices will be, the current Chrome devices, the newer ones can do Android apps. So if there's an app you like, you can certainly find it, for your Chromebook, and the newer ones that are coming out next will also run Linux programs. So now you've got the best of all worlds. I'm holding off I believe my Chromebooks, both of my Chromebooks, are now done. They have reached end of life, which means they're not going to be updated anymore. But I'm waiting for September-ish to see what the new batch will look like, and I'm going to buy one that will absolutely run Linux programs as well, because there are a couple of things that I do that I have, how do I want to put this, semi-automated using Linux, and I would like to continue to do that. So we'll see, but we should see something new in September or October, you know, or August rather, back to school. Or into Christmas, so we'll see.
So Apple announced their back to school promotion.
Yeah,
And it's a free Beats headphone.
Ooh,
well, up to the $350 Beats headphone, and so one of the more snarky reviewers, probably in Gizmodo, said, "You should just buy a Chromebook and use the headphones you already have."
Yeah. Well, one of the things I don't like about Beats is it's all bass.
Well,
and I get that that's the point, but it doesn't help me.
The new ones are interesting because I've heard some reviews on some of the Mac shows I listen to. And yes, if you listen to rap, the bass is emphasized. But if you're listening to rock or classical, it's not.
Interesting.
So there's more intelligence in the speakers now to better utilize the frequencies that are coming in, so it doesn't sound too overly bass when there's no bass.
That's nice. That's actually very nice. But yeah, if you haven't looked at Chromebooks and the things that they can do, I believe you'd be pleasantly surprised. There's just an amazing number of features that are available on a Chromebook. And like I said, I carry a Chromebook almost everywhere, and I have yet to find something I cannot do. In fact, I've written 3 books and am in the process of writing more on a Chromebook. And even in places where there is no internet connectivity, I can happily write. And then when I get back to internet connectivity, it syncs right up, and so it's up in the cloud, and you know, everything is fine. So you should if you're looking at a new product, particularly if you're looking at, you know, you've already got a desktop, and many people still do. If you've already got a desktop that does all the things that you want it to do, but you're looking for something to carry around, you don't have to spend a lot of money to get a Chromebook that does what you need to do when you're not sitting at your desk.
Because most of the time when you're walking around traveling, you just want to check your mail and look at websites.
Right.
You're not doing, you know, quote unquote, work.
And the other important thing for me is when I travel, if my my Chromebook gets stolen or lost, I'm out very little money and no data. Well, bonus.
Yeah.
You know, that's perfect. If I want to, I can just change my Google password, although I don't have to because you still can't log in with to the thing. You can't get into the thing. But yeah, so I would say, if particularly if you're a traveler, take a look at what you can do with the Chromebook. Oh, there it is. I was holding the sheet this way and didn't see. I thought he handed me a blank sheet of paper. What's going on? Oh, there it is. All right. We do have somebody on the line, but we've also got to take a break. So please stay on the line and hang on. It'll be a minute or two till the break starts, but or it'll be right now. So we're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Magic Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Don from Pittsford, and you. It is 28 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Don from Pittsford, New York, on the line. Hiya, Don. What's up?
Good afternoon.
Thank you for your patience.
You're most welcome. Do I remember correctly, on your program a few weeks ago, you advised not to download updates for Adobe Flash Player?
Well, not exactly. You should download the Adobe updates. Don't download the fake Adobe updates.
Yes.
And the trick is knowing which ones are fake and which ones are real.
Any particular signs that one can look for?
Well, ignore all of the update notices you see and go to Adobe.com and download it yourself manually from Adobe. That way you're sure it's the latest version.
Okay.
Directly from Adobe.
Also, get too excited about Adobe Flash because it's going away next year.
Yeah. In fact, a lot of people have removed it, and that most browsers will block Flash already. And the websites that used to use Flash, many of them have switched over to HTML5 now. So you may not even need Flash in your system anymore. And because it is such a vector for malware and viruses, you're usually better off deleting it.
Is the newer program, would that be compatible with an older computer, like the HP 6000 series?
It's the browser and your operating system, and pretty much Windows 7 or later can run an HTML5 browser.
Yeah. Okay. So what is your browser of choice?
Generally Chrome.
You're good. You should be good.
And Chrome has Flash built in. You should never install Flash separately.
Right. So if you're using, unless you are using programs on your computer specifically written for Flash, and there haven't been any in 10 years, you can safely uninstall Flash.
Okay, I think that's probably good advice. I continue to get these update notices probably at least once a week, and I guess I didn't recall exactly what your advice was, so I've rather ignored them and not done the downloads.
Most of them are probably fake.
Mm. Yeah, are you getting them when you're in your browser?
No, I'm getting them when I'm working email.
Oh, then they're definitely fake.
Same, yeah. It's probably the same thing then.
So, they look absolutely legit in terms of logotype and appearance of the the Adobe screen. But
Yep, many of them are. In fact, we get a kick out of the fake flash update notices that don't take an extra 5 seconds, literally 5 seconds, and get the real flash logo.
Right. But many of them do, and as Steve was saying earlier, he got one where everything was right except one link, which is the link they wanted you to click on to get the update.
To remove the program, to remove Flash Player, I simply go to Add Remove Programs. Would it be listed there?
It might be, but Adobe has their own specific uninstall Flash Player program that I just posted on our website.
Oh, okay. All right. And that would be also be obtainable on the Adobe website?
Correct.
Okay. Tell me again, what is the replacement or other program that you advise?
It's nothing that you would install. What's happened is because Flash is so horribly, horribly unsecure, most web browsers have abandoned it entirely and have replaced it with something called HTML5. But that happens at the server end. You don't have to do anything different.
Okay.
You don't need to install anything for Flash programs anymore because most browsers will prefer the HTML5 version if there are both, and many places have stopped using Flash altogether.
Okay. Thank you very much for the review and good advice, and appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yep.
Have fun.
And a lot of those fake notices are getting better and better, looking realer and realer. It's kind of like the scare messages you get claiming you have a virus or claiming somebody is hacking you. Although I suppose the message saying someone's hacking you is true. It's them. They are hacking you right
now.
Yeah,
right.
So they aren't committing fraud. They are hacking you.
Right.
The fake messages that don't use the right logo when the logo is easy to grab. And a lot of times it's coming from it used to be it came from the pirate sites and the porn sites. But now regular websites are getting hit by malicious ads, and it's so easy to stick a JavaScript in an ad and say you need to update Flash and point you to a malicious download.
Right.
So you're on HBO website or DNC website, and there's an ad that has a malicious code in it.
And the ad companies are pretty good about getting rid of those, but they're not instantaneous.
You were lucky enough to be first. That's why what Dave says, turn your computer off, wait a minute, turn it back on. It's probably gone because they found it and removed it by then.
Yeah. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is either Sam or 3 a.m. from West Henrietta.
Sam.
Hi, Sam. What's up?
Hi, guys. I picked up a Lexmark Wi-Fi Interpret S405 printer. And I can't see. I have Wi-Fi, and I can't seem to connect it to. What am I doing wrong?
What happens when you try?
Nothing. Nothing.
You should get it. Does it see your network?
Yeah.
It doesn't recognize nothing.
Does it find any network?
I don't know.
Well, you have to run the wireless setup wizard on the printer in order to tell it to join your network.
Okay, I don't know. How do you do that?
That would be in the instructions that it came with.
Do you know what number it is? Is it an S405?
S405, he said, yeah.
S405, correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In that case,
if you go through the front panel, there's probably an option to run what's called the wireless setup wizard, and we're looking for a link to put on ourselves now.
Okay. I don't see nothing here, but...
But it would be definitely in the manual that came with the printer. Most printers come with a big fold out sheet of quick setup instructions.
Now you do have wireless in your house. You know that's working.
Or a CD. Usually sometimes with the CD it'll have instructions on that.
Yeah.
Or a video.
The CDs are usually old versions and you want to download the latest driver.
Right, but as far as that part, but as far as the basic instructions on how to set it up.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Well, this is for...
This is a brand new. This is used. Okay, that's what I'm saying. And I know there's no. I'm reading the instructions. They said a CD came with it, but I have no CD.
So then you have to download it from the Lexmark website.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good.
And on the front panel, if you go through the menus, there will be instructions for how to set up the network, and there's usually something called the Wireless Network Wizard or Wireless Setup Wizard.
Yeah, and given a dedicated IP address.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you. Guys, can I ask you one more question?
Quickly, yeah.
Oh, I have Windows 10, and I noticed on your website you got Windows update problems. Will my update automatically go because I have Windows 10? I got to muck around.
Yes. Yes, it'll be one or the other. Here's the problem.
No guarantees.
Microsoft has, in the last, well, I want to say year and a half, since the start of 2018, Microsoft has not had a Windows 10 update that didn't screw up somebody.
Okay.
And it's a crapshoot as to whether or not that somebody includes you this time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you should keep it up to date because particularly this month, many of the updates are security updates that absolutely must be installed.
Okay.
It is not an impossibility that doing so will screw up your computer, but that's the crapshoot of Windows 10.
And that's why you want to have a backup before you do anything like that.
Right. Make sure all of your data are completely backed up. Make sure
I got automatic backup daily.
Good.
Good.
And
yeah.
Any programs that you have downloaded and installed, make sure you have those original downloads backed up so that you can reinstall them if you need to.
Okay.
And anything that you installed from a CD, make sure you have the CDs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because if it does, in fact, bork up your system, then you're probably starting from scratch.
Oh, ouch. Okay.
Which also means make sure you've got a Windows installation disk. And if you don't, you can download from one from Microsoft. But also make sure you've got your number, not serial number, what do they call
product
it?
Product key.
Product key, thank you. Mm-hmm. Your product, I can never remember that term. that you've got your product key securely saved somewhere. My suggestion is you print it out and tape it to the side of your computer.
If it's not already. If it was printed on the side of your computer, it may have rubbed off by now.
Right.
Or if it was on the bottom of your computer, it could have rubbed off by now.
Right, they're usually put on the bottom of laptops, and by the second month, they're invisible.
Yeah.
Make sure you've got that, and make sure that you've got that safe and secure somewhere in case you do need to reinstall Windows. Still have a hassle with Microsoft because their base assumption is that everybody is a thief. But you can, in fact, prove that you own the system and you should be able to get yourself back up and running.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's... I mean, I do get it. I absolutely do get it. They make their living from selling an operating system, and they don't want people stealing it. But the reality is many people are, and so they need to be careful. And I get all of that.
I find it interesting with Windows 10 that it doesn't nag you as often.
Yet.
But what it does do is it doesn't let certain features work.
Right.
So, like, when I needed to install a Windows OS to get the programming app for my airplane receiver, I didn't want to buy a Windows PC for that.
Right.
So I installed a VM, downloaded Windows 10, ran it, and it ran enough to run this one program, and then I deleted it.
Right. Well, and I have done the same. I need to check when I do the newspaper column. I need to check my steps. And so I do that, and I do have a legitimate copy of Windows 10, but it's running in a VM.
Yeah,
I don't need it running all the time. I don't need a separate machine for it. I just start up the VM, figure out what I want to do, and go away. I do everything else in Linux or my Chromebook.
I've been running a lot of stuff in Wine lately, and it works pretty well.
Yeah.
The airplane program, I needed to address a USB device. And that didn't work well.
Wine is an acronym, a recursive acronym. It means Wine is not an emulator. And it lets you run many, not all, many Windows programs under Linux. or under the Mac OS. And I use a program called Kindle Create. When I write a book, I run it through Kindle Create before I upload it to make sure it's all good. And that is a Windows-only program, but it runs great under Wine.
Yep.
And I believe it's not Windows only. I believe it's Windows and Mac, and it runs under Wine. So I use Wine for that. But, you know, many people are finding that they have less and less actual need for Windows. Many people are using, instead of spending any money for Microsoft Office, they're using LibreOffice or Google Docs or...
Google Docs.
Whatever. Yeah. I've been more and more impressed. They just did an update to Google Docs, and it has many more features than it had even before. And one of the things that I use significantly, in fact, is the voice typing.
Mm.
You turn on voice typing, and then I just talk to my computer,
yep.
and it puts all the text on the screen for me. It's eerily accurate. By the way,
how far we have come.
Yeah, it does not, you know, you need to, it's dictation mode. Mm-hmm. So you put in the comma, a new paragraph and period and all of that stuff.
You're still not typing.
Because it's not Battlestar Galactica. It's just, you know, typing.
So I'm running Real Flight for Windows in Wine on my Mac.
Yeah.
It's an RC aircraft. This is the older version, but it works great.
Works great.
But I can't find the throttle key. I've got the rudder and the aileron and the elevator, but which key is the throttle?
You're going to crash
and
burn.
Something you're not going to have known, but there is something called a manual.
RTFM?
That you could look up.
This is the demo, free demo that I downloaded.
Okay, it's still, there's a manual somewhere.
There's got to be a key somewhere to tell me.
But yeah, that's a...
can I just use the, can I grab the joystick? No, I can't even grab it in the picture.
All right.
Oh,
so
boy.
The thing is, we have a real, how do I want to put this? We have a real battle going on between among operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
Many of you are running Macs. Many of you are running Linux, whether you know it or not. Chromebooks are based on Linux right now, at least. Android,
which came from Unix, so the Macintosh is the original.
No, it isn't, because the Mac,
Mac is based on Unix too. Yeah,
Mac is running the Mach kernel, which is also based on Unix.
Yep.
But Windows is no longer the dominant operating system that it was. It ran originally at 90%. I think they're down to 75-ish somewhere. That's still decent, but not from Microsoft's point of view.
Yeah, well, if you had a 95-98% market share and it's suddenly down to 90, you're scared. Let alone 80.
And that's one of the reasons that for years, and they haven't done it yet, but for years they've been talking to their investors. You never lie to the investors. That's rule one. They have been talking to their investors about the fact that they want to make Windows a subscription service and that you will pay every year for the privilege of running Windows. And if you stop paying, you stop being allowed to use it.
They're
going to
have to do something, because how are they going to make any money if they're just going off the sales of Windows 10? You know, there's still all those other millions of machines out there that were upgraded from Windows 7 and Windows 8 that are running Windows 10 right now.
Or that are still running Windows 7 or Windows 8 and haven't updated yet.
Yep.
And Microsoft makes no money from them, and that makes them unhappy.
Well, again, all the millions of machines that went from 7 to 8 up to 10, they're still not deriving any money from those.
Right.
There's millions of machines out there, because we hear it weekly just here in our city. Well, I had upgraded to Windows 10. Microsoft is not making dime one off of them.
Right.
And they've got to come up with some type of plan. It's just the handwriting on the wall for this business to stay in business, to make some money, and to keep the shareholders happy.
Right.
I mean, it's Microsoft just a fact of life.
Microsoft is not a B corporation, so they're in it for the money. So I would be aware.
That's kind of how Gates set it up.
It's how pretty much most companies set it up, unless you're a B corp.
I thought they were an S corp.
Yeah, I think it probably has.
Sunk.
Or some other letter of the alphabet, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the fact is that there is a serious need on Microsoft's part to continue to make money. That's their job. Their job is to, because they are not a B Corp, their job is to maximize investor.
That's true with any company. Right. I mean, it's just a fact of life.
You're fiduciary responsibility.
Wherever you work, I mean, unless they sell product, you're not going to have a job.
Right.
The same with Microsoft. It's no different.
Right. And so they're looking for ways to do that. And people are always, talk to me all the time. I heard you said we're going to pay for Microsoft. I'll never pay for it. Okay. You have the right to not pay for it.
Yeah.
They also have the right to say if you're not paying for it, you can't run it.
Mm-hmm.
Simple enough.
Yeah.
And that's then you make a choice. I have not paid for Microsoft since in 20 some plus years, almost 25 years. I haven't paid for any Microsoft product, and I've been perfectly happy.
Didn't I just read that Microsoft released Windows 1.1 in a web app?
So yes, they specifically did that because Stranger Things 3 happens in 1985, and that's when Windows 1 came out. So they've released essentially a game that looks like you're running on a Windows 1, Windows 1.0 window.
Yep.
It's very cool. If you're a Stranger Things fan, take a look at that. It's a very cool thing.
It's 1.1, not 1.0.
Right, it's 1.1. That's 85. That's when that came out. There's simulators online for Apple II and for this and for all kinds of things that you could run if you wanted to. And the Pet computer had one for a while. Acorn had one. A bunch of them had stuff that was out there. And so you can run that, particularly, like I said, if you're a Stranger Things fan. It's actually pretty cool. All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank every single person who called in. We're very appreciative. We're done, but don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week long. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites. Right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that with your generosity, we can continue to exist, member-supported Jazz 90.1. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be kind to each other, will you?